Hey everybody, welcome to Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, a weekly Siskel and Ebert tribute podcast where we review every new movie that opens every Friday, paying our respects to Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, who pioneered the format of movie podcast many, many years before that was a real thing. My name is Brett Arnold, at Brett Redacted, on Elon Musk's X platform. I am here with Mark Dusick of MarkReviewsMovies.com, at Mark Reviews on Elon Musk's X.com. And we are here for the week of Friday, September 22nd, to talk about, we're going to talk about six movies that are out today, Friday, September 22nd. A lot of streaming stuff, actually. There's one main event that is a theatrical release, but I didn't see it because this isn't true. I was going to make the big announcement that I am now a father. We have had our baby. It was a girl. She's a girl. Her name is Cameron Corinne. She's beautiful. Everything's great. She's home. We're here. That's not why I didn't see The Expendables, though. I actually had the opportunity to see The Expendables the night before the baby was born. To be clear, it's not like we had a scheduled date where the baby was coming. My wife went into labor and we left the house and we had a baby. But so the night before, I had an invite to see The Expendables 4 at 7:15. And I also had an invite to see No One Will Save You, a movie that is a Hulu debut that isn't playing theatrically anywhere, except at, I think, a festival in LA. And I guess this screening in New York City that was on Monday or Tuesday night. I already forget. My brain isn't working. I have not slept, but we had to get the pod done. I didn't see Expendables 4 because I chose to see No One Will Save You in a theater. And I'm glad I made that choice. We'll talk about that movie shortly. That is the probably biggest release of the week besides Expendables 4. There's also Flora and Son on Apple, Spy Kids 5 on Netflix. Oh, It Lives Inside is a theatrical release. It's from Neon. It's a horror movie, but it sucks. We'll talk about it. The Origin of Evil, I think, is an IFC thing. And then we've got Relax, I'm from the Future with Rhys Dobby from Flight of the Conchords. What's up, Mark?
Not much.
No babies? No babies?
No babies. I have no big news. Nothing compared to that. So
Right on. Well, I mean, yeah. Let's talk about all the changes to the show that are going to happen. I'm going to start every review with As the Father of a Daughter. And we're going to have a whole new lens through which to discuss films. Let's talk about the sacrifices I've made already. I skipped a screening of The Creator yesterday because I was in the hospital holding my daughter. Those are the huge sacrifices I am making for this.
That's terrible.
For this baby. That's terrible. Unbelievable. I can't believe it. No, thank you so much, baby, for keeping me at home. This is much better. But yeah, I think it's funny that I can't even blame the baby for seeing The Expendables or for not seeing The Expendables. I just didn't care to, even though the movie I saw in theaters would have been available to me at home the next morning. Tell me about Expendables 4 real quick. Half a star review from Mark, the all too rare half a star. So you load this thing, and that makes it sound like it's the worst one.
Easily the worst one. They don't even do the gimmick anymore. Now it's Sly Stallone. It is Dolph Lundgren, and it's Robbie Couture. Those are like the three who are left from the original movie.
Don't even know who that third person is, but okay.
I don't either. I mean, I think he's a wrestler, but
that's,
I don't know
thing.
For sure.
You're already, he shows up. You're right with they already lost the plot, because the whole premise of The Expendables is A-list action stars from 20, 30 years ago. They're back. They're Expendables. They're doing missions. It's a nostalgia play. This is the fourth movie, and once you get to the third name on the poster, I'm like, who are these people? And they just have the last names, and it's not easy.
Yeah, it doesn't help. Yeah, it doesn't help when it's Jackson, and you're like, wait, who? Wait, what? Samuel
which,
L? No, yeah, no.
Which
nope.
Fox?
No,
it's is in Curtis this, and which Garcia?
Jackson. Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. Who? I mean, to be fair, 20 years ago from now is like around the time that 50 Cent was.
Yeah,
but maybe kind of an action star, but I think his star power was less about the action movies that he was making, but
his
whatever.
Star power was like, wasn't he in like one movie that was Get Rich or Die Tryin', which is like the name of his album. And then now he has like an empire on Starz television doing the Power TV series, plural. There are several of them. But the idea that 50 Cent is like up in the rafters with like Sly Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Dolph Lundgren is hilarious.
Yeah.
And Megan Fox and Andy Garcia yes. are up there too.
Yep. Yeah, it's awful. It looks terrible. Most of it's shot on green screen. So it's overlit during that. It's underlit because the thing is cut to shreds. Like, it is edited beat by beat on the action things. Like, two people are in a fight and maybe they get pulled two moves off, and as soon as it's time to get to the next move, the camera cuts and there's a new shot established. It's that part of it is awful. The story is non-existent, basically. There's no one's having fun in it. It's obvious everyone is done with this thing. Even the people who are new to the series are like, I'm here for the check. It's awful.
It's a unique franchise to me because it's like a DTV style in terms of the quality of the movie. They are very poorly made and put together. I've only seen the first two and I watched them this week because I just never got around to them and I thought I was going to see four. So I started watching them. And yeah, they look like shit. The action doesn't really pop. I would say night and day difference between one and two, with Stallone directing very badly the first one, and then some Simon West or something directed the second one, and it immediately looks a little better, but it's still just so middling. The most obvious jokes, like here's a joke in the Expendables universe, the one I remember. It's Terry Crews looking at Arnold Schwarzenegger and saying, if you do that again, you're terminated. Look at the camera. Every joke is a Jim from The Office, look at the camera style line. It's not good. I guess I'll catch up with the Expendables 4.
Eventually.
When it hits Netflix 10 years from now, which is how I watched the first one.
10 years? I think that's being generous. I would be surprised if it's like 6 months from now it's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. It'll be there faster. I mean, it's just a matter really of quick. I will not get
when
to
you,
it.
When you get around to it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about No One Will Save You, a movie I have complex feelings about, but I will... I think I do feel like my theatrical experience made it a worthy thing, even though I have misgivings that I really want to talk about in detail, but we shouldn't. But we'll talk about it at large. Here's a trailer for No One Will Save You on Hulu right now. That tease of a trailer makes me very concerned about how to talk about this movie. But I think we have to acknowledge the central premise. So I will let you take it away. What is No One Will Save You?
Yeah, so it starts off as what seems to be a pretty simple home invasion setup with Caitlin Dever's character being all alone and isolated, this cabin out in the middle of nowhere. She's ostracized from the whole community. Nobody will even look at her or let alone talk to her. And so she's all by herself, no one to help her, no one to call to ask for help. And something or someone comes into the house and she has to hide from it and run from it. And it is hard to talk about. First off, there's no dialogue except for one repeated line in the third act. So
that's right.
Everything here is communicated visually and with the sound design, which is aces. I mean, it's fantastic.
Doesn't that piss you off that you had to watch it on Hulu a little bit?
Yes and no. Okay. I mean, I
agree. The sound design was amazing. And I was in the theater going, wow, this sounds great.
Yes. If you're watching this at home on Hulu, figure out a way, the best possible surround sound setup you can have or fake. Because you need that, because where the sound is and how loud it is, and depending on all that, it's very much part of the storytelling of figuring out where everything is in relationship to each other, which the whole movie does a very good job of just establishing the house and where she is and where all of these other things are. Just even like the creaking floorboards, like where is the creak in the floorboards? Yeah. How did she get past all that? It's really, really well done on that level. I mean, what do we talk about the elephant in the room right away? Because it
I think so. I guess the elephant in the room is that this movie, I wish it didn't think that it had to have a trauma backstory metaphor to the movie, because I think it is fine and it didn't bother me too much. But I think like the resolution of that storyline, which like is teased out the whole movie in a way that you kind of know the general idea of what happened to this girl, but not the detail, not the specifics. And then when you find out those specifics, I don't know, it landed with a thud a little bit for me, but not enough to ruin the experience of this was a really cool movie where, oh, you wanted to talk. Sorry. I think I got.
No, that's funny. It's funny that we have different ideas of what the problem with this.
The elephant in the room is based on what I just said about the trailer being a tease. I understand. I will say that now. We'll get back to what I was just saying. You're talking about the fact that this is a home invasion movie with a twist. It is, spoiler alert, if you want to go in knowing nothing, but this is like what they're selling the movie on, to be clear. The movie is a home invasion movie mixed with an alien invasion movie, which I think is so like a perfect genius premise idea, a combination of, I mean, obviously the word invasion is in both, so it just feels clever and smart, but the movie handles that premise pretty well. And the idea that, and the fact that it's silent, I didn't know. So like, I was particularly just impressed, because you watch a movie, you expect one thing and you get another. I think that helped, that I was just like, this is not what I expected. And I think it very lovingly pays homage and its respects to so many iconic alien movies throughout. It's just kind of like a clip show of like this kind of alien movie, that kind of alien movie. Now it's like this, now it's like that. But it's always kind of just like a nonstop chase scene, except for when it flashes back and has trauma backstory stuff that, you know, the metaphor is, I walked away from the movie, Mark, with the, you know, it's pretty obvious, right? The metaphor is your grief is inescapable. You can try, but you won't escape it. You have to accept it or whatever the fuck the happy, rosy version of the ending is. But like, I think a lot of people will get lost with that plot point. Is that what took you out of it, or is it something completely different?
No, what took me out of it is just, it's the aliens themselves. I was on board.
Really?
The movie. I was. It seems unfair, but this is where I'm at. I'm at this point where it's like the aliens were too much. It was fine at the start. That first whole sequence of inside the house of her trying to evade the single one and everything like that, it's really well put together. And I was, even though the aliens don't look fantastic, I was still with it. But then it brings in this whole other level of mythology to the aliens. Like, what can they do? What are they here for?
That's what I meant when I was saying it goes through the different types of horror.
Yeah, exactly.
Movie. Yes.
Yeah. And I liked the general design that there is all these differences between the aliens. All of these aliens are different that show up, and there's different like action. There's suspense sequences going on with each one. Like, that's fine. But there is all this just added weight of watching these aliens do what they're doing and trying to figure out why they're here and what they're doing. And it didn't work for me because of the minimalistic level of the filmmaking, where it is just about sound and it's about acting. Deaver is really, really good here.
Yeah.
I think people are going to sleep on her performance because she's so good, but she has to do a lot of work. She has to do all the character work that's going on, and just in every single moment communicating what is going on within each sequence beyond the filmmaking. It's really, really strong work. And she's great in general, but this is a standout performance so far from her, I think. But you have all of that going on, this like very, very minimalistic filmmaking. And then you have this whole backstory of aliens happening alongside it. And it just took me out of it just enough, enough.
Okay.
I appreciated the whole experiment of the thing, of not having any dialogue and using other sounds so much and using, you know, visual language to tell a story that dialogue can't, but it still was just a bit too much for me. And it took me out just enough that I'm right on the fence with it.
That's so interesting, 'cause I usually read your reviews, so I feel like I just didn't have time this week, obviously. But I feel like I knew what your problem was going to be. I was like, everyone has the same problem with this movie, right? It's gotta be that the trauma backstory just feels like a little too much or something. But it's I'm fascinated to hear
that you're shocked, completely different. Disappointed. I'm surprised. It's okay.
That's okay. Yeah, it's fine. I definitely liked this movie doing the stuff, doing that stuff, the morphing from a regular alien movie to more of like a body snatcher thing, or like a there's aliens of different sizes in this movie. Like, I don't want to spoil too much, but I mean, you can watch this on Hulu. Turn this off and watch it. But the old school alien abduction imagery, like the big eight UFOs, they're gray little guys. There are crop circles. I just like all that stuff so much that I'm willing to forgive a lot, including a pretty big swing trauma metaphor thing that when the reveal happened, I was just like, okay, like, I guess that's a it's very screenwritery. That's what I'll say about
yeah.
it. But it didn't take me out of like enjoying the movie and thinking it was like a really great, like tense, fun alien, like a little derivative, sure, but like a fun experience. I don't think it's going to be on people's end of the year lists or anything as like the best horror movie or the best sci-fi movie, but I thought it was so much fun, and they did make it work without the dialogue, even though I feel like there's like one or two moments where I'm like, they're just like characters are like grunting instead of talking. And I'm just like, okay, I don't know. Maybe just talk if you're going to do these weird. I don't know. There was a couple moments where I was like, this is stretching the idea a little bit, but the grand scheme or the larger point is I thought this was really cool. Gets a little over its skis with the metaphor, I would argue, but it has too many highlights, like, you know, a normal size alien, a little guy, and like a kaiju size alien. And I was so delighted by those reveals that it skates by for me. I'm like a very respectable 3 out of 4. I think I recommend No One Will Save You on Hulu.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I didn't have a problem with it. It is just it's trying to be this thrill ride that is grounded in some level. And then, yeah, it's just, I mean, it really sounds unfair, but that's where I'm at. The aliens just took me out of it just enough, even though the whole thing is about aliens. There we are. So I'm at 2.5, which
that's
isn't
so funny.
Again, as yeah. always, not a recommendation and not a recommendation. It's just right there. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, you had a decent time with it, but you don't. Yeah, you don't know what to do yeah. with it. That's totally fair. I also think it's cool that if you read up online, like the movie's biggest inspiration is obviously a lot of movies that you see in it, like Signs and a million other movies. But there's an unmade Steven Spielberg project that a lot of film nerds will probably know about called Night Skies, I believe. That was supposed to be what Toby Hooper and Spielberg made before they ended up making Poltergeist. And The Night Sky, I think Spielberg ended up splitting Night Sky into two movies, one about a child befriending an alien, E.T., and the other about a family haunted by inexplicable paranormal activity, a.k.a. Poltergeist. So at one point, Night Sky was a movie that was described as, I think, an alien invasion, home invasion movie. So it's really cool that this guy was able to say Steven Spielberg never made this like by the numbers isn't the right word. Maybe it is, but like a very stripped down alien invasion in your house movie. And I think it works on its own terms for that. But yeah, if you're looking beyond for like something deep, I think it strains a little to be a little deep. But still, 3-star experience. I enjoyed it. If you can somehow see it in the theater, if you own a theater and you want to throw on Hulu, I recommend that experience. But definitely, this is one of those movies, Mark, I can tell you have a great surround sound system at home. And that makes such a difference. Like, it really, these movies are meticulously crafted for that. And it does pay to see them either in a theater, and if you can't, with surround sound. So Headphones are fantastic, especially these. Yeah. I have, like, these really expensive Sony Bluetooth wireless guys that I actually wire in to do this one. But I will just do another random plug. Roku has a product called the Roku Ultra 4K, because I have a 4K TV setup or projector setup. And that is the thing that allows me to plug in these headphones to the remote, and I can watch anything on TV on my giant 110-inch screen with headphones. So that is the way I do it. I don't know how Mark does it, but that is the way I found to do it, because I tried for years to get that set up and I couldn't get it to work. Via like my Xbox or whatever. Here's Flora and Son, a new movie from John Carney, who's done, whose name you probably recognize from Once, the indie sensation in 2007. I had this album. I'm sure everybody did. And then he made a movie in 2017, I think, called Sing Street that I love so damn much. And I watch it a lot. And this is another one. It is also, it's in his wheelhouse of, they're not, would you call them musicals? They're not. They're movies about music.
Once is definitely a musical. Yes. Sing Street's yes. kind of close to one. But yeah, it's just music.
It's hard to categorize music. Them. Yeah, they're yeah. movies about music. Arguably musicals, but here is Flora and Son, the trailer. It's on Apple TV now.
Young Max, one more offense and you'll be behind bars. Flora, you're his mother. Find him something to do.
What are you doing right now?
You don't want to know.
You are a great mother.
Am I?
Happy birthday.
What's that?
It's yours.
Don't want to play. Since when am I a guitarist?
I can't go on like this, living in a shoebox with a kid who hates me.
Can't wait for the day I don't have to be here.
Go on! Go back to your dad! I might learn the guitar myself.
That's just too funny. Takes years of practice, commitment.
Are you really going to talk to me about commitment?
We're ready to teach you how to shred the knob on guitar.
So, you want to learn the guitar. This is a gift you can take to your grave.
What's your problem?
I didn't know I had a problem.
You're teaching guitar online, love.
I found this to be delightful, as I do most, if not all, John Carney movies. I think there's one that people didn't like, starring Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley, and I skipped it.
I think it's called Begin Again.
I like him too much to watch it. Is it bad?
It's not terrible. He's really, really just trying to copy Once. But you know, bigger stars and a bigger budget. And
should have called it Twice.
Yeah.
That's the fatal flaw.
That's the joke. That's the joke.
All right. What is,
are you sure you didn't see Expendables 4?
Yeah, no, I actually wrote Expendables 4, so I didn't have,
there
to
we go.
Flora and Son. What's it about?
It is about a few character relationships, mainly Flora and her son, Max. And they're struggling. Max likes to shoplift and is getting into trouble with the law. He's about to go to juvie if he keeps it up. And Flora is a difficult mother, I suppose we could call her. She doesn't really care. She's a bit bitter about being a young mother to like a 12-year-old boy. Doesn't really have much of a life beyond that, but really wants one. And she buys her son a belated birthday present of an acoustic guitar that she found in a dumpster and gets it, you know, fixed up. Son doesn't care for it because he likes electronic music. And so she decides to start learning guitar from Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Not the actual Joseph Gordon-Levitt, although it seems like that. He's so natural and good and easygoing here. I'm like, wait, is that just what Joseph Gordon-Levitt is like in
you
real
life?
You
do want to think cool. that. Yeah, absolutely.
That would be very cool. But his character is in L.A. She's in Dublin, and they have a bunch of conversations. And eventually it does become about mother and son. My big issue with it, I still liked it. I really enjoyed it. I loved it at certain points when they're talking about music and they're talking and they're putting music together, just like in Once, which is a film I adore to no end. I mean, when it is about that, it really is just amazing. But it does feel a bit disjointed. It feels as if Carney is throwing two different, completely different stories in here and trying to get them to gel, and they don't quite come together.
Oh, absolutely. Like the romance thing and then the son thing.
Yeah, he is really, really chasing after what he had with Once, I think, when it comes to like the bittersweet romance that can't work out. But man, wouldn't you really wish it could? And I don't.
Yes.
I wish he'd stop doing that.
There's like a transcendent scene in this movie, though. But the scene on the roof with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I thought was really great. But then like the movie ends and you expect like that's it just ends, like there's not like another roof scene where like it comes together in the way you want it to. I totally agree with that. It is such a charming movie though, still.
Yes, and it is.
I feel like all of his movies are about the transformative power of music, and I find them to be so damn inspiring, even though like I watch them and like I don't I've never actually watched one and like then picked up my guitar and started a band or wrote that screenplay I've been sitting around for whatever. I will instead watch 600 movies a year and review them for you instead of be inspired by this movie to do other art. But I guess you could say this is our art, Mark. We are reviewing movies, and that is what we get joy out of. And that is great and good. And I'm going to keep doing it because this movie made me feel good about it. These movies are feel good, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think John Carney does them really well, even if you're right, he's been chasing the high bar of once the whole time. And I think Sing Street is like, it's a 5-star movie for me. I've watched it so many times where even though I have a minor problems with it, by the end of that movie, they all fall away for me. And I just go, let's get on a boat and live our lives or whatever the ending of that movie is. I really like this. I thought the music in terms of John Carney movies, I really like a couple of the songs in Sing Street. I think the entire Once soundtrack is like flawless. I had it in my car for years and years. I don't think Flora and Son has the same level of hits, I would say. There's like one song that's like amusing and clever, right? But like, you don't want to listen to that song again. I don't think you leave the movie going, I can't wait to go listen to that Flora and Son rap music, whatever the hell it was. It's not terrible. It's like definitely works in context of the movie, but I'm just saying like other John Carney movies, you walk away and you go, I need that soundtrack right now. These earworms are in my head. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. The songs in this one are forgettable, but I think the songs in this one are doing something different than what they do in Once in Sing Street, because there's that moment, there's that scene where he picks up the guitar and he plays a song one way and he plays it a completely different other way. It's like, these are beautiful. Three chords, but depending on how you use those chords,
chills.
The entire tenor of the song changes and the meaning of the song changes and all that. Like, yeah, that song doesn't need to be memorable. The point of it is that juxtaposition between the two different forms of that same song.
You're right.
That's what's important about it, is not what the songs are, but how he uses the songs in the story to tell this story about how music can change a person's life and
sub in
life can affect the song.
Right. And sub in anything for music there, I would say, like art, anything. I just love movies where you can do that. And I agree. Like that scene with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, there are multiple scenes I would say in this movie.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying when you said there were parts that I love, because that collaborative effort scene, like the celebration of that collaborative effort, transformative nature of music, the intimacy of that, it's just so amazing to watch. And the chemistry between them is actually quite good. And like, you really want things to happen. And yeah, I really love this. I related to some of the characters. I love a character, you know, a character who just like, things aren't enough for them in life, and they never have been, and they never will be. And what do you do with that? And about a mom who had a kid young and gave up on her dreams. And now, like, does that mean you have to give them up on them forever? Or can you maybe get back into them now that the child's grown up and maybe they can be involved? It's not about the genes. It's about dreams, Jack Rayner says in this movie. And you might think he's the same guy from Sing Street, because he's also in Sing Street.
He could have been, couldn't he have?
It could have been the brother. Yeah, sure. Why not?
I don't remember. Is the brother in Sing Street trying to be a musician or not? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a huge point.
Oh, he is. That's right.
Ending,
okay. Yeah.
The ending gets me so good, because the ending, he hands him lyrics and he goes, one day you should write this song. And then the music, I never noticed this until like my fifth watch of Sing Street. The music that plays over the end of Sing Street is obviously the song that his brother just handed him the notes to. And it made me just bawl when I watched it this time.
Yeah, I love that movie too.
It's so good. But yeah, this movie also has that like COVID era Zoom relationship. It was evocative of that to me. And that was also kind of interesting. But yeah, a movie about how art should change you and should move you, and not settling for shitty top 40 or whatever Joe Gordon-Levitt was making fun of for her for bringing up. It's very close to a 3.5 for me, because I love Carney, but it's still a 3 because of all the things we mentioned.
Yeah, I'm right there too. I kind of wish it was a little stronger. I don't even know how you blend these two
me
stories
neither.
Where it
but
is.
He tried to.
It's tough. He tried to, and I'm okay with it, because the mother-son stuff becomes really affecting too as it goes on, because there is that relationship evolving. And when you realize like she understands how much she cares for the son, and him seeing how much she cares for him in a particular moment is really moving.
It's, oh, yeah.
There are so many moments here that are like, I just wish the overall narrative were a bit stronger, but it's definitely worth checking out just because of those really, really strong moments that are here.
I'm sure as the father of a daughter, if I watched it again, it would really destroy me even more this time. Yes. All right. Get used to that joke being made a lot. Here is Spy Kids Armageddon, a.k.a. I had to double check my work here. I think it is Spy Kids 5 because I grew up. I was like 10 or something when Spy Kids came out, which is funny because you might have reviewed that on your website because you started.
I did.
Yeah, I was going to say that movie came out the year you started, I guess. I think.
Yep.
It's the first DVD I bought. Not like movie I bought. I bought tons of VHS tapes. It was the first digital video disc I bought. I don't think there were many features on it, if any. But I have an affinity for this franchise. I enjoyed the trilogy. I never saw the fourth one that had Jessica Alba and, checks my notes, Joel McHale in it. I heard it was terrible, but I did watch Spy Kids 5, and you will hear my thoughts in just a second. Here's the trailer.
Games, do you want to get busted? There's something wrong with this game.
Antonio.
Hi. Well, good. It's locked. Just making sure.
Really?
Something's happening.
It's all over the world.
It's like somebody combined a virus with...
the Armageddon code. What are these things?
They're bad guys from our video game.
Get out of here, kids. Go!
Wait a second. I think Mom and Dad are spies.
You think...
we have to find Mom and Dad now.
I need Mark to talk me down from this one.
It
obviously is my nostalgia playing into this, a little bit at least. But I thought this was totally charming and good enough. I am not saying it's great, like I think the original Spy Kids is. And I would have to watch the original sequels, the 2 and 3. Spy Kids 2, The Island of Lost Dreams, and Spy Kids 3. Or Spy Kids 3D Game Over, I believe. I would have to rewatch those to see if they hold up. I never saw the fourth one. Seemed like it didn't live up to the sanctity of my Carmen and Junie adventures. But this one I jumped back into, and I found it to be kind of delightful. I thought it was very clearly trying to be a reboot of the original movie. It is almost the same movie where like kids find out their parents are spies, become spies, save the day. It is like very formulaic in that way, but it's, you know, obviously new kids, new parents. I thought Gina Rodriguez was good. Zach Levi didn't bother me, even though I don't like him anymore because we all know he's a prick in real life or whatever. I don't know. I thought this was fun. Spy antics with kids is fun. The James Bond inspired score is fun. It's a Robert Rodriguez film. He wrote it and directed it. His son, I believe his name is Racer Max, wrote it with him. There's something about these like Austin troublemaker studio. Robert Rodriguez made this movie at home, at his home studio, vibe going on, where I think like his aesthetic fits so well on Netflix because it's digital anyway. I feel like he made the digital look good to me, where Netflix movies mostly look bad. I thought the digital backgrounds here looked cool and inspired, especially because the movie is riffing on the idea that like they're in a video game or characters from a video game are out in the real world. So, you know, the modern updates for Spy Kids being like modern technology being hacked by spies and people getting hacked and stuff like that. I thought it all worked well. I thought Billy Magnussen was an inspired choice for the bad guy who doesn't get to do too much, but he's fine. I think, you know, it's hard to beat Alan Cumming as Floop from the first movie. Very iconic to people my age. Do you remember that movie at all?
I vaguely remember. I liked the first two.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I like the first two. They're fun.
So where did this one, why is this one lesser?
I don't know.
You? Yeah.
This is so weird because as you're talking about it, I'm like, I can see everything that you're saying and I can understand it. And I don't know. It felt too routine. I like the ideas here of having, of, you know, the technology now being so a part of life that like the kids have to have their tech locked up.
Yeah.
So that they don't, so that mom and dad's spy antics don't get discovered by some random hacker or something. And so you have all these messages about responsibility and learning honesty and all that stuff. I liked I don't know. It just didn't work for me because it is basically the same thing over and over again. It's a bunch of generic action sequences. You know, you have these great ideas and these nice messages that are feel very relevant and current, but then you just throw in a bunch of fights and chases and they didn't quite work for me, even though, I also agree. The adults are good. The kids give off this sense of wonder and fun to it, even though I think they go a little bit over the top.
100%.
Loving the bunk beds more than, what was it? Like the kitchen that can make anything? Okay.
The kitchen that can make anything is the most iconic imagery from the first movie to me that I think about all the time is they put a little piece of like a pebble or something in a microwave and then they turn it on and it turns into a Big Mac fries and a Diet Coke or something.
There you go. Awesome. But they were these kids were really, really enthusiastic about the bunk beds.
Yeah.
But I mean, but still they're everyone's having a good time. You can tell. And I just didn't quite
and you're sitting there arms folded.
I don't think it sucks. I don't think it's awful. I don't. Okay. I mean, I think two was pretty bad. Not two, three was pretty bad.
Yes,
this movie is also just kind of copying the plot of the third one. I think
I don't remember
about video games too.
I remember the scratch and sniff card they gave me at the movie theater that one. But that was a total gimmick movie to me. It was 3D and they had scratch and sniff, smell-o-vision or whatever. It was. I don't remember the movie at all.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy it, although I could see myself enjoying it if it maybe just did a little bit more things differently. And this just feels more the same. And I'm not entirely sold on the anti-violence message at the end after you go through this entire movie up until right before that message gets told at the end of having a bunch of fights and all that stuff. And like, it doesn't, I didn't buy that for a second.
That's funny.
Yeah,
I think it works because I think if anyone else made this, it wouldn't work. I love that. I have an affinity and affection for Robert Rodriguez. I even liked Hypnotic. You'll remember. There's certain things about this movie like I couldn't write down fast enough, like Ray Harryhausen skeleton army. You know what I mean? Yep. Like
from the second one, which stood out in the second one. Yep. I remember that very specifically. That I was paying homage.
So I guess you're not wrong. You're not wrong when you say this is just kind of more of the same, but I haven't watched that movie in 20 years. So like, I'm like, this was fine. I had a great time. I think I would have had a similarly great time if I had just watched one of the older ones. And maybe if I binge watched them all, I would go, this one is lesser than. But several years removed from seeing any of these, watching this, I thought it was really fun in all the ways these Robert Rodriguez movies are, like really lo-fi, but really impressive digital or visual effects and very silly stuff anyway. But this movie was like, as you mentioned this a little bit when you were talking about it, there's some really nice messaging in this movie, I thought, about the importance of being honest with your kids and the importance of being honest in life, playing by the rules and not cheating. Like, you know, it's not like quite a morality play or anything like that, but it does get at the importance of playing by the rules and being compassionate rather than using violence. And I know you said you didn't buy that, but like,
I didn't buy it, but
yeah,
it's a good
but
message.
Like, it's nice. And like the use of it's all those elements work for me. And it even takes a dig at the idea of like prisons, which is the most liberal position I've ever seen in a mainstream movie is them saying that these people shouldn't go to prison or whatever. They're just like, fuck prisons. Prisons are bad. And I'm like, that's a cool message. Cool message for the kids to hear. There are other ways of rehabilitation. You don't have to send all the bad people to jail. Arguably, people are going to be really mad at that message, which I just think is fun that Robert Rodriguez was able to slip in some liberal Texan attitude into Spy Kids Armageddon, which is on Netflix now for millions of kids to watch. It's like, I know people say propaganda is bad, but I'm like, when it's well-meaning, it's good. Okay. That's my new take. As the father of a daughter, that is what I now think about these things. So Spy Kids Armageddon, I am full-throated, not even half, not saying it's a 2.5 or that's a 3. I'm saying it's a full-throated 3 that I really enjoyed, had a great time, didn't check my watch, thought, wow, they really, it's 22 years since Spy Kids. Totally cool that they did a reboot. The original talent in terms of behind the camera is back. I guess there's a missed opportunity, right? There's no cameos of the original Spy Kids. Maybe there's like a post credits or that I missed. But yeah, no, I don't think they're in this.
I don't think so, because I fast forwarded through the credits. Thank you, Netflix, for making those post credit scenes easy to find if they exist. So that's good. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So.
Right on. So, like, I think it's cool that it stands on its own. It's a new era. I would love if this started a new franchise and was big for Netflix. I just think it's such a fun idea. James Bond, but kiddie version. Like, it was just such a big part of, like, it probably helped me get into movies, honestly, like that movie. Like, just a formative experience for me. So that probably is baked in a little to why I totally enjoyed this one. It's a good movie.
There you go. I didn't hate it. Two stars. Yeah.
Right on. Lots of clever gadgets and bits. You know, the movie can't live up to some of the more practical effect oddities of the original, like those big ear Tony Shalhoub or like the thumb guys. But the thumb guys were actually visual effects, I think. But yeah, pleasantly surprised who has enjoyed this so much. If you've never seen any of these movies, I would say go back and watch the original and maybe work your way here if you want to. But I really enjoyed it. And I was very surprised to have. I expected to think it was, you know, a little kids movie I didn't care about. Let's talk about It Lives Inside, a horror movie that is very frustrating to me. We'll talk about it. Here is the trailer.
Tamira, what's going on with you? All the stories we heard growing up, they're all true. It lives inside. Don't you hear it? Josh, Mom. The Pishash doesn't kill you right away. It feeds on you slowly. And when it's ready, it feeds on you slowly. And when it's ready, it eats your soul. What do? We must make an offering. Boom.
This was a very disappointing experience, Mark, because I was so intrigued by the setup and I thought it was going great to start. Very intriguing, very culturally specific, with a focus on identity. And it was undone by the most cliched, boring, generic, horror trope filled follow through that I've ever seen. It totally loses track of whatever metaphor is happening. Do you agree? And what is this movie?
I agree. And yeah, I'm watching the trailer. I was remembering in the moment all the different cliches that it brings up. Like, I had forgotten about them. It's unfortunate, yeah. I guess, that this movie is now coming out after we're reviewing this now after I've seen just like a couple of other movies just this week for next week that deal with like dreams and are they real and how do they affect us and all that.
Yeah.
And, that's one cliche this movie does. This one also has an invisible monster that probably should have stayed invisible because it looks awful when you actually get to see it. Oh man, what else is going on? Anyway, but you're right. There is this very specific story being told, not just about the demon being from Indian culture and that going on, but also about someone. She's a child of immigrants from India, and she is trying to fit in the best that she can, and she still feels like an outsider. And in trying to fit in, she isolates this other girl that she was like best friends with as a kid, and the guilt that she's feeling over that.
Yeah.
Very, very strong story that has a very specific tone and tenor and purpose to it. And then it drops all of that just so that we can have all the scares in the nightmares and all the scares of this invisible thing that could be right behind somebody. And maybe it is. And that climax is so ridiculous where it is trying to meld this intense attack on a character with her going back to her roots. And so you have these like very violent attacks and this poor woman being hunted down by an invisible demon. And then the movie will literally cut to mom and daughter in slow motion cooking food. And it's so jarring.
It's funny. That it's unintentionally funny.
You guys know what's going on, right? Because we do. And why are you taking your damn time with this stuff? I don't know. It's just the rhythm of that scene and that montage is so bad.
Sorry, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, that's it. It's just so bad because it doesn't work rhythmically or tonally or as suspense or anything else that it's trying to do. And that's just the third act.
Yeah, it's hard to get invested in just because the demonic force, or whatever you want to call it, is so amorphous and horseshit. Like, it's just made up as it goes along style. Yep. Like, it can do this, it can do that, it's this, it's that. And it's supposed to be this. I thought it was a pretty clear metaphor at first of like, this is inside you. You know, you can, it felt like it was very literal and okay at first. And then it just becomes all encompassing demon that can do anything. And as you said, dream sequence horseshit. Yeah, it just really sucks. It has no stakes because of that. You're just like, anything could happen. I saw this a while ago now, to be honest with you. I didn't rewatch it. It was probably 2 or 3 months ago. But very little has stuck with me other than how disappointed I was with the setup versus the execution. It was very disappointing. It's just like generic horror movie with like a Hindu filter put on it. Like, it doesn't have any of the cultural specificity you actually want from it. It just kind of pays lip service to it, I would say. I don't remember what I logged it on Letterboxd, but I think I'm going to give it 1.5 here.
Yeah, I'm at 1.5 if you find it. But yeah, that's where I'm at. I think it sounds good. 1.5 sounds good.
1.5 does sound good. You might be hearing that from me again in a second. Actually, no, I don't think I feel that strongly about this one. But this is a movie that I desperately wanted to like, and it just never grabbed me. This is The Origin of Evil from IFC Films.
Allô?
De la part de Stéphane, j'aurais voulu parler à Serge.
Serge, je pense que c'est ta fille.
Pardon, je suis tellement heureuse de vous rencontrer.
Vous avez une maison très belle.
Il lui ressemblait pas beaucoup.
Moi, je gère les entreprises de mon père.
Toi, tu la laisses faire. Puis mon accident, c'est devenu compliqué ici.
N'en faites pas trop.
Faut pas me faire piquer tout mon fric parce que c'est le salope.
Stéphane, on est sûr que c'est elle?
Stéphane va s'installer chez nous.
Having a hard time finding the words for why I found this so deadly, deadly boring. I was checking my watch every like 30 seconds, I felt like. I couldn't believe how disinterested in this movie I was. I think it has to do with the fact that it's riffing on very familiar and very recent material that recent movies and TV have done far better. And then also, the suspense in this movie is completely null and void because the audience is told way too early what's going on. And then we have to wait for 2 hours while it figures it itself out. So I guess I can explain why I didn't like it. It's derivative, forgettable. I just would say the ultimate bottom line, I didn't find the juice to be worth the squeeze of this movie. Why did you?
I did. Yeah, I did. And I mean, it's going to be hard for me to explain why. It is. You're right. It is. It's about like a family of rich people who are really terrible. And you find out the extent of just how terrible they are because this outsider, this estranged, illegitimate daughter played by Laura Calamy, having financial problems, calls up the father that she's been meaning to, you know, meet with. And now she has a reason to. And so gets in with the family. And everything, you just get to watch as all these people are just terrible to each other on multiple levels. And it keeps escalating and escalating to the point where it is like the satire of everything that's going on. And you get to see the depths of awfulness of these characters. And then it does. I don't know. I don't think the reveal happens too early. I think it happens at just the right moment so that you realize what is really going on here. It's like, I mean, it's like an hour, I think. I think it's like an hour in when you realize what's really happening.
It felt earlier, but maybe you're right.
Okay. I don't know. But then it turns into something else. It turns into this other thing. It turns into this thriller. And then you also get to see like, oh, all these people are really, really awful because they're trying to manipulate that situation in certain ways and doing things that you thought were really bad. And then when you see it in the new light, like, oh, that's even worse that these people did this thing. Yeah, I was caught up in it. I was caught up in the way that it changes its purpose. It changes what its goals are. It changes how it does it. It changes going from comedy to thriller. And it keeps an eye on these characters who, are broad, but I think they're performed really well. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, there
I
we
think
go.
So.
Yeah. But come on, Calamy is she's great in general, and I think this is another really, really good performance from her.
Yeah, I think she's great too, but I think she's like severely underserved by this movie, and I think. Yeah, I just didn't buy her character and the way she acted. I like her so much that I just kept waiting to like this movie, but I didn't. But like, it's something about it just being like they're trying to make a point, right? About like actual, like, I don't know, low level criminals versus like the wealthy and how they're criminals too, and like what one can get away with versus the other. Which like on paper sounds like a fun idea, but again, movies that take the piss out of rich people have been like an entire genre in the past couple years or few years. I don't know. Is it a post-Trump thing? I don't know. But like, there are so many things that are like this movie. Our buddy Rob had a review where he said, you know, what I think everyone would probably say about this movie. It's like Succession and Parasite, but French, essentially, was his review. And like, that's what it is. And it just never, maybe it's because I read that review first and then watched it and was like, well, that sure is what it is. And it just never like transcended that for me. I felt like I was watching something like tick boxes of what it was supposed to be doing. Never, never, not for a second was I engaged with these characters. And I really can't explain why, except for I have. But it just feels, I hear what you're saying and why you liked it. Because on paper, I think it sounds okay. But in execution, I cannot stress how bored I was. I think it's because we all have like a predestination of where it's going to, we know where it's going to end sort of, even if we don't know the specifics.
I didn't,
and it just kind of does what it does. Yeah, I don't know, man.
I didn't see some of the stuff that happens later on coming, but that's, I don't, maybe I'm dumb, I don't know.
No, you're not dumb, but it's like,
I know
it just doesn't know how to take that pulpy idea. It's like two different movies competing. It's like a pulpy thing and then like a very character-based, like down to earth thing. And I feel like those two things don't mesh in a way that made a fun movie. I was so fucking bored. I guess I'll be, I'm not even going to be generous. I'm just going to go 1.5. I hope to never think about this movie again. I just didn't care about it.
I still enjoyed it. And I don't think having it be about the characters and also be sort of a pulpy thriller, as long as you have both of those things working in tandem, and I think this movie does. I think it does give you the characters, and I think it does give you the pulp thriller stuff, and it works because of that. So three stars for me.
What if Succession were a gothic psychological thriller is a great idea, and I don't think this movie is a great movie. So ultimately,
it's not great. No, I think it works. I think it's fine.
There you go. There you have it. All right, we're gonna end on a less dour note. Mark and I are going to agree. Let's talk about Relax, I'm from the Future with Rhys Darby. I can only say it like that. I don't know why. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry to our New Zealand listenership. Here's a trailer.
Okay, so essentially what's happened is something hasn't happened to someone. So I need your help to help it happen, essentially.
You're a very disappointing time traveler.
If you're reading this, please don't be cross with me. But I have traveled back in time. Don't worry, everything is under control.
And I'll pick kind of rules. Where'd you get it?
The future.
Despite one or two complications.
Here's the plan!
I don't know what you mean!
It was like you should have had a better plan.
No, this is the plan. This is phase one.
So what's phase two?
Saving the world.
Glad somebody's on that.
Everything will become clear. Trust in the plan. There is a plan. Some little differences can...
I find Rhys Darby very charming and very funny. I feel like a lot of people might not. I feel like I've definitely heard people think he's grating and like one note and just... What is it? Just funny? Guy talks funny? Is that the humor? I just want to reject all that and say he's very talented, very funny, very charming. I thought this movie was kind of delightful. And I'm not even going to say despite the fact that it's like riffing on very well-trodden time travel material. That's kind of why it works, is because it's riffing on well-trodden sci-fi material. Do you agree?
Yeah, it has this like weirdo goofball energy to it that I got caught up in it almost immediately.
Me too.
Yeah, and it's because Darby is so charmingly off-kilter and just funny. That's it. He's there, and he's this incompetent time traveler who has come back in time to basically do nothing, or to do this plan so secret that nobody, he can't tell anybody what it is. And the whole message here of just like, look, it's okay. As long as the people who know what is going to happen and know how to fix the problems of the world are on it, you don't have to do anything. And doesn't that sound very tempting? I really like the underlying moral and philosophical ideas that are going on here, while it's being a very goofy comedy, because it is about like, there's this other character, and I need to find, Gabrielle Graham plays this other character who really, really wants to change the world, but now she's become cynical about whether or not she could do anything. And then this time traveler who proves he's from the future shows up and says, don't worry about it. You don't have to do anything. Everything works out. It's okay.
Right.
Would you be okay with that? I was sitting there thinking, like, if somebody really told me it'd be okay as long as I didn't do anything except live a comfortable life,
right,
would I be okay with that? And that this movie puts forward questions like that, while also being a very funny comedy and a very clever sort of, by the end, there's a lot of plot stuff that is a little too complicated.
Surprisingly complex is what I was going
to say. It's a little complicated, but it's also at that point, if you're on its wavelength, it doesn't matter, because it is bringing in all these new ideas too while it's going. Again, maybe a few too many new ideas right at the end of the movie, but it does still have that philosophical core to it, and it still is really funny. I don't know what else to really say about it, except that it is a goofball movie. And if you get on its wavelength, I think it's really easy to do, because the performances are right there. The filmmaking is right there. The tone of it is right there. As long as you're on its wavelength, you're like, oh, there's a lot more going on here than just being a silly movie.
That's why I think I was so surprised by it, because you see the trailer, you see the poster, you see the premise, and you go, this is going to be silly and like a diversion and like, you know, a fun sci-fi thing, but not anything I'm going to think about for a long time. And it's not. It is that. It is a movie that has a lot going on and asks a lot of questions and is philosophically compelling and interesting. But it's also a sweet and silly indie that makes you feel good. So I think it's kind of amazing that it pulls off all the things that it pulls off. And it has, in large part, due to Rhys Darby. But Gabrielle Graham it's been kind of a two-hander. And she's very, very good as well. The band Pup is in this movie, which is such a weird fact. Love that band. They're in the movie. It's a great scene. It's like one of those, I feel like it's a classic example of a hidden gem, a movie you've probably never heard of. It's riffing on sci-fi movies you've seen, but it still manages to be fun despite using those things. As we mentioned, it does get a little crazy with all the time travel stuff by the end, but it all feels like it works. It makes sense. You're right. It left me thinking all these questions about the future and what it would be like to know these things. I love how it brings in like Looper type people that are chasing.
Oh,
yeah.
That deadly weapon, that very polite.
I love
Deadly
it.
Weapon is hilarious. That's a great bit.
I mean, yeah, my whole Letterboxd review was just like, you know, we all turn to dust eventually, because that it was an allusion to the really wonderful vaporizer that this movie has, which also feels, we're talking about the gray aliens in No One Will Save You. I feel like that's also like classic old school sci-fi, like a vaporizer, but it just literally turns you into dust. And I thought that was great. There's little flourishes like that that work. I really love the idea of like the movie designating important people and insignificant people. Like you can kill the insignificant people, because they're not going to fuck up the time loop that I'm here to stop. So like just the crassness of that, I was like, wow. And like that actually hit me in a weird way, where like some random guy on the street, she checks him with her thing and goes, oh, your life has no value. And then just like, it is actually, if you think about this shit for more than a minute, it's way darker than a silly comedy should be. But it all works, and it all remains kind of upbeat and happy the whole time, because Rhys Darby has such infectious energy and the movie is so silly. The more I talk about it, the more I realize it's like a very good movie and very impressive that it works. Shout out to Luke Higginson, debut feature based on his own short. I thought this was really good. Very strong three stars for Relaxing from the Future.
Yeah, three stars for me. You said it. It's a hidden gem. I hope it doesn't stay hidden too long, because find this if you enjoy these kind of screwball comedy sci-fi things that make you think. It's definitely worth finding.
Just him arriving, the opening scene.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's so
the
funny.
Purple suit.
He arrives in a purple suit, just like, screaming and yelling, probably, like in a park with children. Like, you just imagine, like... Yeah, it would be insane if that happened, and no one would believe him, and people would think he was a pedophile and crazy shit. It is very silly and funny, and as we said, goes way harder and darker and deeper than you expect it to. So, very strong movie. That was the week of Friday, September 22nd. We'll be back next week. May or may not be shortly late. Be forgiving with our release date times. Hopefully, they'll all stay on Friday. This one worked out.
Yeah.
And next week should. I will definitely be seeing Saw X because I gotta for the other show and this show. And I'm not sure what else comes out, but we'll talk about it. Bye.
The show starts in one...
Shut up.